This is St. Zero from the Headphone Bleed, and you're listening to the Bicast. Symptoms may include an open mind, sense of community, shinier hair, and whiter teeth.
Results may vary.
You can catch me every Saturday night at www.live365.com/stations/St. Zero.
Welcome to the Bicast, a podcast by, for, and about our bisexual community. We're speaking with Deborah Kolodny, editor of Blessed by Spirit, Bisexual People of Faith, reflecting a wide spectrum of religious tradition and spiritual paths, including Buddhist, Hindu, pagan, 12-step, Christian, and Jewish. Over 30 contributors speak about the intersections of their faith and their bisexuality. You've been working as a bisexual faith leader in a non-queer specific context for the past 12 years, both running an international Jewish organization and as a pulpit rabbi, and also being an executive director of
Neharim,
being the executive director of Neharim for a little bit more than a year now.
Right.
How are you?
Wow, I sound so busy.
Well, you do.
Yeah. I appreciate your, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show, Lynette. This is a great honor to be speaking with you. And I'm glad you led with my last 12 years, because one of the things that I would love to see is greater visibility of bisexual leaders outside of the bisexual community. Those of us who are running faith-based organizations or who are writing novels or who are CEOs of corporations, so that we see actually the depth and breadth of impact of self-identified, self-loving, out bisexual folk in the larger culture. So thank you for leading with that. It's been an interesting time for me after having been such an outspoken and visible activist for, I don't know, I guess it started 30 years ago, so maybe it would be 18 years. It's been wonderful for me to just relax into being my full human self and have those I work with and those who I'm in relationship with professionally see all of me, you know, this politically progressive, spiritually mystical, athletic, Jewish, bisexual person, and have my bisexuality be so matter-of-factly accepted, honored, respected, and seen. It's been wonderful.
That is wonderful. We can all hope to get to that place at some time.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully sooner than we hope.
Yeah. You know, it's true. One of the things that's hard for me is that I look at some of the conversations going on right now, both in the LGBT community and in the culture at large. You know, with Facebook, you get access to all these memes, and there are the same ridiculousness that I was seeing 30 years ago when I started my bi-activism is still out there. You know, just choose already. Pick a side. You're really gay. You're just in the closet. You're untrustworthy. You're oversexed.
I know.
No male bisexuals exist. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, truly, 30 years later, and the same absurd stereotypes and fears and projections are still out there.
I know, and I'm pretty new to the community, but, you know, I was talking to someone else who said that pretty much exactly the same thing to me the other day in an interview, and she says it's worse now, even.
Yeah.
You know, she says she was unbelievable because she'd been off the grid for a while.
Mm.
And I'm going like, well, I guess this really is time to get, because it's about the human condition. It's not just the bisexual condition. It's about how we treat each other on every level,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah.
You know?
So what I wanted to say, Lynette, in response to your last comment about things being worse culturally now for bisexuals in terms of, invisibility, erasure, misinformation, mythology, biphobia, it's so ironic because The Pew study just came out showing that 40% of the LGBT community identifies as bisexual. That's not talking about behavior. So how could it be that the intensity of the ignorance and the, you know, verbal violence is greater now? And I'm wondering if it isn't backlash, you know, for those who are uncomfortable with fluidity or who find safety in surety. You know, the more of us who are outspoken about our identity, the more fearful they are. I don't know.
I kind of think that, because I don't think, and this is my hope, I don't know this for a fact, that the general population really is not reacting that way to us being so out and bi. But there are a group of people that are very invested in just not being there, and they're getting quite frightened, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that's where it's really coming from.
It may be.
And you know, a lot of people say what other people tell them, and they get spoon-fed a lot of things, and they don't even think about it. And, you know, because I hear that a lot. You know, I'll hear some poor kids say, well, you know, you bisexuals, you just only like men and women, and so you're transphobic. And I have to quiz this kid on where he got the information, because he's like, well, somebody told me. And I said, well, and then I have to educate. But, yeah, it's like, oh, my goodness.
That's truly ironic, transphobic, because really the trans and bi communities have been great partners, great colleagues, really, for the decades that I've been engaged, because we all seem to come from a place of understanding that binaries are false social constructs. So
absolutely, and I think it just seems like another way to wedge difference in between people, because we know that it's not true, but there is that rumor that is being spread around that bisexual people, not pansexual, of course, but bisexual people are inherently transphobic because they only like two genders.
Oh my gosh, wow.
Yeah, and it's out there.
Language is powerful. I wanted to add also that one of the things that has been most powerful for me as an out bi leader now at my Neharim job, which is a Jewish LGBT retreat and advocacy organization, is that I'm able to bring theology and cosmology to the forefront that's very bi-friendly. So, you know, for decades there have been lesbian and gay theologians and clergy people who have been looking at scripture and the wonderful project of trying to create healing environments for LGBT people who have been so harmed by religion. So as a, you know, a bisexual thinker, theologian, it's been so wonderful for me to add my voice to the fray to say, oh, it's not just lesbian and gay folk. Also, you know, there are things about our basic scriptures that lift up the beauty and holiness of bisexual people, not the least of which is our creation story, which really makes clear that the first being was both male and female, and that is what is in the image of God. And if we think about that now in a non-binary sense, you know, God is both genders, everything in between genders, everything outside of genders, and so are we. And, you know, if we live in that non-binary gender place, then, and we're working our spiritual practice, then, wow, what does it matter if the person we fall in love with has an innie or an outie? You know, we're falling in love with the whole complex, aspiring to be as holy person as they can be. And it's the soul that's what matters, not the garment of the body. So at any rate, it's been very exciting for me to do that now through Neharim, but also, you know, in the mainstream Jewish world. And to see total responsiveness, you know, embrace, actually, that kind of welcoming theology.
No, I am excited about it because, of course, I've had, you know, my issues with the creation story and, well, frankly, organized religion as it is. And this way of thinking of it is a much more comfortable and real way of me thinking about my connection with a God, if there is one. And I'm not either an atheist or a theist. And I'm not an agnostic. My spiritual beliefs are my own. That's the only way I can put it. But this is good for me to see that now there may be some way of us connecting the way we think with the church and the church connecting with us,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, getting the support we can get from them, because it, our religious organizations are a great source of comfort and help in our daily lives.
They can be, and they have been a primary source of spiritual violence as well. So
yes.
I think those of us who are religious leaders have a particular obligation to, in the Jewish framework, to do tshuva, to repent and to make whole that which we have harmed. So being a part of the spiritual leadership in this country who is committed to that, to create healing and opening and embrace, and not just welcome, like, oh, let's put GLBT on our brochure so people know that they can come here and we know they exist. Not just, you know, this superficial quote-unquote welcome, but really celebrate the fact that God loves diversity. Just look outside the window. God loves diversity. You know,
exactly.
Creation is
exactly.
diverse. Humans are diverse. The way we love is multifaceted, and bisexual people bring a particular wisdom about love and relationship and spiritual potential. I mean, for me to have been born with this gift that I can love beyond gender, that it doesn't matter to me at all. I go straight to the heart and straight to the soul, so to speak, straight.
Yeah.
directly to the heart, directly to the soul. What a blessing. And, you know, as a feminist, I remember when I was younger, a lot of my straight feminist friends had such intense problems with men. And I was like, having had the blessing of being in a relationship with both men and women, I could say, you know, everybody can be a jerk.
Yeah.
That's not a gender-linked trait. And everybody can be accountable, responsible, compassionate, and loving. These are really not gender-linked traits. So there's so much, I think, that bisexual folks have to offer in terms of our life experience that are important, that bring people together, you know, that help us transcend imaginary differences.
And that's a really important point you brought up about how lesbians have problems with men, and because that tendency to say all men are jerks. As bisexuals, we know that everybody can be a jerk. You know, it's not gender specific. I mean, there are things that are taught to one group of sex or the other, but I think we have a much more rounded view of people.
I think we do. You know, the human spirit and soul is fragile. Though we have all been hurt, and we all have our ways of protecting ourselves from those hurts, and we have different flavors of those. And when we're hurt, we don't behave at our best, you know, and that's just human. And going back to what we were saying earlier, hopefully those of us who are in the business of faith can be agents of healing and restoration of hope and restoration of wholeness. You know, that's kind of what I see my job as.
I'm very excited about the book. I can't wait to purchase it.
Mm.
I think it's going to be a huge help in the community. And you've been out as a lesbian since 1981, and then you came out as bisexual 3 years later. So you have a long history of community service, and that's really wonderful.
Mm.
And this is one of the examples that I like of how we can actually not just say, but actually do. And I wanted to thank you for that, for being part of the community and doing that.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, that was very actually selfish of me. When I first came out as bisexual, after having been lesbian for 3 years, there were no resources whatsoever in my area. Robin Oakes had already started things in Boston, and I got in touch with her because this is a funny story. We actually grew up in the same town in Far Rockaway, New York, so Far Rockaway seemed to have something in the water that nourished bisexual activists. And we spoke, and I got at least some comfort in knowing that there were some organizations out there in the world, but not where I was. And this was in 1984, I was in Philadelphia, and I started the first bisexual support group at the University of Pennsylvania, where I was in law school. So, you know, I began in 84 with my bi activism, and 30 years ago, and I haven't stopped since. When I moved to D.C., I connected with bi community because I did not feel any kind of support or safety in the larger lesbian and gay world. I felt, you know, nothing but kind of resistance. and rejection. So thereby, you know, D.C., I was an activist where I met Lorraine Hutchins, and Lorraine and I continue to be friends, you know, below these decades later. And then because I am who I am, I got excited about the bigger picture, and I got involved with Binet USA. So for 5 years, I was the one of the six national coordinators of Binet USA, and then I was doing all kinds of training of GLSEN and GLAAD and NGLTF and HRC to deal with invisibility and erasure and support a greater connection with their bisexual constituents. And one thing led to another, and then I was a facilitator of the National Religious Leadership Roundtable, which I think was, you know, really an important time, an important moment when an out bisexual was facilitating a lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender entity to really to reflect NGLTF's commitment to bisexual visibility, and also to reflect kind of a normalizing of relations within the LGBT community in terms of honoring the gifts of everyone at the table, which is why it's so frustrating now to see that some of the same ridiculous memes are out there.
I saw just last week the bisexual guidebook for religious organizations came out, and we understand there was a press release party today and a press conference. Could you tell us a little bit more about that, about the book, and how it came about?
Thank you for asking. The book was written at the Religious Institute, which has put out many, many wonderful resources for organizations of faith and leaders of faith. And they took on the task of creating a guidebook that would be supportive of those seeking to understand the particular needs of bisexual congregants and or students, anybody, you know, who might come to a spiritual institution who is bisexual, because there is actually nothing that specifically addresses that need. There's resources for lesbian and gay folks, and there's resources for trans folks, but there was nothing bi-specific. So first, I want to do a huge shout-out to the Religious Institute, led by Deborah Hafner, and to Marie Alford Harkey, who is the primary writer. A little bit over a year ago, they convened a group of theologians and clergy people. Almost all of us were bisexually identified to frame what would go into the guidebook. And from that day came this beautiful resource that starts with basics around bisexuality, lifts up sacred texts and religious traditions that are supportive of and welcoming of bisexual folks, and then specifics on how to create what they call a bisexually healthy congregation, affirming both religious professionals, congregants, how to address worship and preaching, how to give pastoral care and counseling, how to particularly attend to youth needs, how to engage in social action. And then they have an extensive section on resources. So it's really an exhaustive document, and it's a godsend, literally, to congregations who want something at their fingertips. They may not have anybody who's identified, who's come out yet as bisexual, but they want to be welcoming and affirming and inclusive. So it was very exciting to be part of creating it, very exciting to be part of the big gala push-out this morning, and I'm hopeful that it will really change the discourse around bisexuality in a faith environment. I mean, back in 2000, when Blessed by Spirit was published, it was the only thing out there on bisexuality and spirituality, and it was mostly first-person accounts, you know, an anthology of essays. It included some liturgy, some poetry, some theology, but it wasn't designed for the spiritual organization or spiritual leader in terms of the how-to book at all. So this guidebook is a wonderful addition to the field.
So I've seen a couple posts in the last couple days about gay and lesbian support within churches, and I just keep thinking, oh, wow, this needs to be given to those organizations and those faith institutions today.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I'm delighted to see is that the folks who are part of the National Religious Leadership Roundtable have changed quite a bit. And there are so many trans representatives now at that table, and at least at least a couple of us are out as bi. So there is kind of a breaking of the lesbian gay hegemony that's happening in our queer spiritual leadership, which is wonderful to see.
So, Deborah, can you tell me about Naharim?
Sure. First of all, it's about 10 years old, and it is a Jewish LGBT retreat and advocacy organization. Prime deliverables are amazing retreats. We have a women's, a men's, we've had transgender, an all-gender retreat, all designed to create kind of an experience of summer camp for adults that's spiritually rich and meaningful, that queer Jews will feel totally comfortable at. And what we experience when we're there is this remarkable integration of our spiritual selves and our queer selves in a way that even if we're in a welcoming congregation, very few of us have had. There are workshops on queer theology, but there's also workshops that are just fun, like, you know, on baking challah or making jewelry. And there are workshops on spiritual topics like blessings and prayer, and there's beautiful, beautiful prayer services that are filled with song, and there's, when I'm around anyway, there's always a dance at some point. And folks report, myself included, just a sense of remarkable empowerment and renewal and inspiration. And what's so beautiful is that so many people who felt that they were not welcome, either growing up or even today in the Jewish world, have reclaimed their Jewish identity and reclaimed their home in Judaism, which of course for me as a rabbi is a particularly beautiful thing to see, because there's so much that I believe Judaism offers in terms of wisdom and how to be a great person, how to be a thoughtful, reflective, caring, loving person, and how to really enjoy yourself with
yeah.
the spirit, you know. So that's very beautiful for me. And in addition to that, we do some really interesting work across boundaries. So in February, for example, I was the only Jewish person invited to a convening at the Star King Seminary in Berkeley on queering Islam. And I was there as a spiritual ally and got to be, you know, at the birthing of this really radical movement in our sister tradition, Islam. And right now what that is has lifted up for us is the potential for creating a Jewish Muslim Christian retreat so queer faith leaders from all the traditions could come together and celebrate, engage in ritual, pray, and learn from one another, not just about our queerness. One of my passions is really looking at and attending to the intersection of oppressions and the lifting of queer spiritual leaders as activists and leaders for good causes in general, like saving the earth. There's strong theological foundation for people of faith to be concerned about global warming and the state of our environment. Why should queer leaders step aside from that? It's critical. It's mission critical at this moment. Hunger abatement, growing peace in troubled areas in the world. So on tap for, you know, the next year is looking at what we're calling an Abrahamic retreat. I would love to put together a Jewish bisexual retreat. So I really want to hear from all those Jewish bi folk out there to see if that's something that you would attend. Because when we pitch these things to funders, they want to know that we've done our homework and that we have a real live constituency. And it's been, frankly, personally, so beautiful for me to now kind of be living the intersection of all the streams of my life, you know. So for 30 years, an activist in the bi world, for the last 15 years as a religious leader, and for 9 years before I started at Naharim, running an international Jewish organization. So it's like, wow, you know, interfaith activism, Jewish leadership, queer leadership, and here I am landed in like the fulcrum, the intersection of those three things. So it seems quite remarkable and wonderful. And I encourage anybody who's listening to go to our website, neharim.org, and see what retreat we're having that looks good to you. And it's, while we're a Jewish organization, non-Jews come all the time, people who are partnered, people who are curious. It's a safe space. We are pluralistic in every way. Both in terms of LGBTQI, in terms of people of different faith traditions, we have allies who come, and in within the Jewish world, you know, if you're Orthodox, conservative, Reform, Reconstructionist, Renewal, none of the above, totally pluralistic. So
I was going to remark that looking at the website, I noticed how reasonable some of these retreats were, much more reasonable than I've seen those kind of summer retreats from other organizations. So I just think that's really a good thing, because that allows people who aren't wealthy to attend.
Mm. Yeah, reasonable in terms of pricing. Yeah, we do our best, and that's why we are continually looking for foundation funding, because basically we price our retreats at cost.
That's great.
This sounds like it could be used as a really good guideline for other religions to work with, and I love the idea of doing the intersectional in between the, you know, between the religions. Mm. That is very important.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is, you know, if they could adopt this kind of programs too, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I think of Moral Mondays and Reverend Barber. It's kind of amazing pulling together of all the issues, including LGBT people, into this movement. And that's part of a religious renewal that we need in this country. We've allowed the Christian right, especially the Christian right, to dominate so much of religious discussion in this country for far too long.
I agree, John, and it's been very frustrating for me as a faith leader, because the vast majority of people of faith are progressive and are leaders in progressive causes. In the Jewish world, which of course I feel best equipped to speak about, I'd say 90% plus of Jews, of affiliated Jews, those who are actively going to some kind of congregation, are somewhere in the range from liberal to radical, you know, on all kinds of issues. So it's been very, very frustrating. And, you know, People for the American Way and the Interfaith Alliance, thankfully, are out there. Americans United for Separation of Church and State to represent an institutional progressive voice. But, you know, I've been very unhappy with how the media basically looks for sensational types of speakers. And so they go for the aggressive right-wing pundits, Christian pundits, and they don't represent people of faith. Or they represent just themselves and their segment of people of faith, but certainly not all people of faith, not by a long shot.
Yeah, Westboro Baptist Church has visited two of our local high schools in the last few years. And each time there was a tremendous community, school, and parents support against what their message was. But it was big news, right? And it's you know, it would be so nice if they just didn't get any press at all.
Yeah, I know. For the longest time, when back when I was working with the Religious Leadership Roundtable, my fondest hope was that a stable of progressive left faith leaders would be created that would be kind of promoted to the major media outlets. And just like, you know, there were the Jerry Falwells on the right and Pat Robinson's on the right, who always got interviewed, who always got their bully pulpit in the public sphere, there would be a group of us who could lift up the progressive, loving, I guess, you know, unbiased, true voice of faith. And I still have that hope.
I do too. Because they do nothing to help but reinforce my wish to stay away from religious organizations altogether. And I know that there's good works being done on a, you know, grassroots daily level.
Yeah.
by the churches, and that doesn't get talked about, you know, and that should be what's out there.
Yeah, and it's not just the good works in helping feed the hungry and home, you know, house the homeless. It's also good works in terms of supporting queer rights and supporting immigration rights and, you know, supporting social networks.
Exactly.
I'll say there's times in which the church can be doing great progressive things, and then on the other hand, not. You know, I was part of the Catholic left for years, and you know, while there was there were issues in which we were completely against the hierarchy of the church on, there were so many women religious, especially women religious, who were doing all the great work of the church. You know, caring for the needy, running hospitals and schools. All of that work, and even the death penalty in the state of Maryland. I mean, they were, you know, the Catholic Conference was one of our hugest allies on the death penalty. But, you know, when it came to other issues, they were completely on the other side of them.
Yeah.
I hope some, I'm seeing some change, and I hope it keeps going. But we wait.
Yeah, well, preach, brother. That's what I have to say. Clearly, within certain faith streams, that's true. I mean, the inability for women to be ordained in the Catholic Church, their stance on abortion, et cetera, for me, highly problematic. That's an understatement. Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable. So that is true. There are mixed bags, and there are also traditions, like from in the world of Jewish renewal, we started out queer welcoming. We started out ordaining women. These were never issues to be debated. It was our fundamental founding principles, totally egalitarian, totally progressive, totally welcoming of interfaith families. You know, it's just on every level, and the most radical of politics. So, yes, there are faith communities that are complex, and there are others that are actually probably fully aligned with the values, you know, that we all hold.
And sometimes it takes years and years and years to get these things through.
Right.
I was raised a Lutheran, and it took so many years, even though so much of the church was welcoming, it took so many years to get that stuff on paper and official. And I'm just looking at what the Presbyterians just went through on marriage. And I know that, you know, the New Light movement has been around forever and has had a ton of support. You know, I have relatives that are Presbyterian and have always been supportive of the movement. And so, but it's still, you know, those bureaucracies, even within churches that are more democratic than the Roman Catholic Church, sometimes take years and years and years.
I'm pretty close to the same upbringing as John, as I grew up Lutheran and then married into a Catholic family. And it's there's a lot of things you have to sift through in your head.
Right. I get it. And sometimes, you know, if people make the decision that this is moving too slowly for me, I totally appreciate that and understand it and support anyone's individual choice on whether they want to hang out or, you know, hang in for the long haul. Mm-hmm. And on a point of optimism, the degree of change that we're seeing is radically positive. The number of congregations where it's permissible, if not utterly celebrated, to do same-sex weddings, the number of faith traditions where people can be ordained clergy if they're out queer, the number of faith traditions where theologies that are queer are celebrated and integrated is growing, you know, by the year. And look at what's happening with same-sex marriage, which is not just a secular issue, even though it's about civil marriage. Faith leaders have been in the forefront of those struggles in every one of those 19 states. So things are actually looking really good, I think, and in terms of faith progress on this issue, on our issues.
I've always looked at marriage as a religious freedom issue, and the fact that, you know, if a minister has a right not to perform a same-sex marriage, then a minister has as much religious right to perform a same-sex marriage.
Agreed, and it's a separation of state, you know, church and state issue, too, because it has nothing to do with whether or not it's legal, you know. the clergy person should be able to act with their conscience, their religious, spiritual, theological conscience, absolutely.
So it is looking very encouraging out there.
It is. It is. And I have to say, I think we're winning the culture war, if you want to use that, paradigm, that our younger people are being raised more and more with expansiveness and appreciation of whoever they are growing into being. And, you know, kids are coming out younger and younger and are being supported by their parents and their extended families and their schools. And we're living in a very different world, thank God, or thank us, you know.
I have to say that is so true, because when I was growing up, the word bisexual had some very bad meanings, and it wasn't until I started really exploring it this last year and talking to my younger friends who in their 30s who had have a so much healthier grasp of sexuality, that I was able to start turning those scripts around of what I thought bisexuality was by talking to them. A lot of it, I mean, not just them, but quite a bit of it was like, oh. So I am very encouraged by how the younger generation is coming along.
Yeah.
Well, I think I see all of these old prejudices, at least where I am in the world that I'm bringing my kids up in, that they don't deal with them, and, you know, in terms of like how we were raised. They're raised to just accept everybody. Sometimes it's really hard for them to understand some of the history, because they can't believe that even 10, 20, 30 years ago, things were like they were, because they're so removed from it. So, you know, it's always good to like give them that little background that it's not always been this way and it's not this way everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're growing up in a world where Glee is on television.
Yeah.
You know, and which I love, by the way, I'm a Gleek. And I just, thank goodness, you know, like I say, I think we've won the culture war. And it's only going to get better and better and better in terms of acceptance and understanding. And not just acceptance and understanding, that's like begrudging, but appreciation and celebration, you know. The experiences that we have are unique and are valuable and bring insight, you know, to the larger culture.
Right, we come from our own perspectives, and that is part of our use on this planet.
Exactly.
And to be free to be ourselves is actually helpful for all of us.
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, if one looks at, and I do, if one sees liberation of self and liberation of soul is one of the highest levels of, you know, spiritual achievement. Non-attachment to material things, non-attachment to your own sense of who you should be or who you thought you were going to be or what your parents thought you should be, you know, but being present to the gifts that you have and expressing those gifts in ways that are compassionate and loving and creative and life-affirming. If liberation and true expression are the highest levels of spiritual attainment, and I think that they do represent a very high level of spiritual attainment, then, you know, it's our obligation to be out, to be clear about who we are, to contribute to the public discourse in meaningful ways.
I have to agree with you on every little point there. Well, it looks like we probably covered most of our questions.
I think we have covered everything here. John, you came in late, and but you've gotten your sea legs now. So was there anything that you wanted to ask that we didn't cover?
I actually think we're pretty good. You know, I would like to talk a little bit about where you see the state of the bisexual movement these days. Because I think I think a lot of us are actually pretty excited that we're kind of on the move again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I in D.C., I'll tell you, we've got a 200-person membership of our local bi group.
Wonderful.
You know, and not everybody's very, not everybody's active, but, you know, we're back to the kind of like doing dinners and brunches and those kind of things as social events. And they work. I mean, we get 20 people out on a Saturday afternoon pretty regularly. And
that's great. So, back to the glory days.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great to hear.
And there's other working bi groups in town. There's a bi women's group that's a little less active, but actually, you know, working with us together, it helps because, you know, some women need women's space, mm-hmm. and at least needing that protected space sometimes. So we help build each other.
Yeah, I see that all over. I mean, you know, even in here where there hasn't been much in way of group activity, there are efforts being done to get things started and get going, and you know, and that's encouraging. It is.
Yeah.
And I see that all over.
Yeah.
I see everybody.
I think it's a change. I think that those same people that we couldn't organize 5 years ago, for some reason, they're looking to be organized now, or they're looking for community. And, you know, I kind of see it nationally. I see growth in Binet USA. I think that I'm seeing more new people come out. Mm-hmm. So
I think that's a big thing that's going on, is that the organizations are coming out full force and saying, hey, we're here, we're backing you up. And I think it's putting the fire into people, helping to put the fire into people, mm-hmm. you know, that they're actually, you know, reaching goals and representing us and doing these things. I think that helps a lot. And what bothers me is that there's a whole lot of people that still are not aware that they even exist, you know, and it would be nice if we could, you know, I mean, it has to be at a community level. We have to be locally supporting each other. But it's, you know, they also have to know that they have their own organizations that they can go to. And I would like to see all that develop.
Well, you guys have kind of answered the question that you asked. The only thing that I would add is that I'm thrilled to see the level of sophistication at Binet USA and BRC, the Bisexual Research Center, and the American Institute of Bisexuality, three of the really main national organizations. I'm thrilled to see the level of coordination amongst national bi leaders. I am thrilled to see the websites. I'm thrilled to see that funding exists that where there was none 30 years ago when we were starting Binet USA.
Right.
So I what can I say except I'm grateful and excited and supportive, and I don't know, just to see some of the new activists, the new academics, the new writers, the new organizational leaders. It's, you know, it's kind of, it's what every activist wants to see in her lifetime, you know, a continuation of the torch being carried, and a level where the next generation is more sophisticated, you know, than the generation, you know, than the founding generation. So really, it's kind of a founder's dream come true. So,
well, you know, we have it easier because when you were active, you know, we have the internet. We can connect instantly with each other. You know, we have dialogue with the UK all the time, the organizations there. We coordinate activities. We can address issues almost instantaneously when we see them.
Yeah.
And we have, it's easier, and it's so, and it is binding us quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but we are very much aware of how it was before when, you know, you spent all day long on the phone trying to get a dollar, you know, we know all, you know, and, you know, putting out newsletters, and then that, you know, that event already happened 2 weeks ago by the time you can get the newsletter out.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's very much, it's not like that anymore. It's like right there,
yeah.
You know, and the writers can be on Tumblr and all this great, powerful, inspirational people can be right there for people to look and say, they're experiencing what I'm experiencing.
And great podcasts are available. Yeah. And, you know, in addition to all of that, the technology really is helpful. And I also just want to give a shout out, may his memory be for a blessing, to Fritz Klein, you know, who funded an institute that's doing great work in terms of getting financial support out there.
This has been awesome.
Well, I just want to thank you folks for being out there on the cyber airways and for inviting me. And I look forward to continuing to work with you as we continue to lift up the visibility and the beauty and the creativity of bi folks.
Absolutely. I would love to continue with doing series on special needs and growth. I'd love to do that and have you back on. And for other things, too, well, just to chat and maybe just have coffee.
Coffee's
cyber
good.
Cyber coffee.
Cyber
yes,
coffee.
John, we'll have to have cyber coffee, but Lynette and I can actually be in the same coffee shop.
Exactly.
It's so nice to have you here. It really is. I just feel like, yay. Thank you very much. And I just want to close. I just want to remind everyone, you're not wrong. You're not broken. You're not alone. You are a human being, and you are bisexual. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The views expressed on the Bicast do not necessarily represent those of Binet USA or the Bicast crew.
Back.